Walla Wani. Welcome to Earth Matters, environment social justice stories from Australia and around the world, produced at the studios of 3CR on Wurundjeri country in Naam, Melbourne, and broadcast across this continent via the Community Radio Network. I'm your show host, Beck Horridge, and I do pay respects to the elders, past, present, and emerging.
On today's show, we'll hear the call to a festival of women leading climate action, and later all about the great campaigns of the Arid Lands Environment Centre, which has been defunded by the Conservative state government, the Country Liberal Party. First, the founder of the Women's Climate Congress, Janet Salisbury, invites women of Australia in all our diversity to come together on Jarjar Warung country in Castlemaine Town Hall with other women to explore how women are leading a national and international paradigm shift to promote more rapid action on climate change based on compassion, kindness, and care for all life on Earth.
My great honour today to be talking again to Janet Salisbury, the founder of the Women's Climate Congress. Hi, Janet.
Hello, Rebecca. Thank you for inviting me.
We've got an exciting event coming up, and I'm already packing my bags to get down to Castlemaine at the end of March for the Women Changing the Climate Victorian Congress. Can you tell us more about this event?
Yes, thank you. Well, this is a very important event this year for the Women's Climate Congress. And it's being hosted by some of our members who live in Victoria. And it's going to be held in Castlemaine at the wonderfully iconic Castlemaine Town Hall. So I think it's a wonderful venue for people to go to, a beautiful place to go. And it's a national event. So everyone welcome from all over Australia. We already have a number of women coming from all sorts of places in Australia. And it's going to be a gathering of women leaders, community leaders, advocates, who are working together to create transformative change in relation to climate action, because that is what the vision of the Women's Climate Congress.
There's no doubt we need change, Janet. We've been plugging away at these approaches to trying to get some movement with global heating while the emergency's been heating up, literally. We've got flooding and fires at our doorsteps. And I remember you saying the other day that this is very exhausting. We need to act. So tell me more about the conference.
The conference is a coming together of women, and the Women's Climate Congress, who are hosting the event in Castlemaine. We formed in 2020, really in response to the Black Summer bushfires, when, I mean, women came together in grief and frustration that there wasn't more action by governments. And in fact, so-called climate wars in the political arena sort of had stopped us at that time from making progress, and still stopping us from making progress today. So women came together with the intention that by sort of foregrounding women's voices, amplifying women's voices, creating a space for women to come together to bring agenda and priorities to the fore, we could lead a sort of a systemic change that would allow governments to take much more ambitious action on climate.
I mean, it's kind of bleeding obvious that women have a different approach to things often. How do you think a more feminine-centred approach to getting some results on this business of bringing down CO2 and global heating and building a better future for everybody, how would a women's perspective be different, or a women's way of doing things be different?
I think women do bring a more intergenerational perspective and a more caring for humans and caring for the environment perspective to the policy agenda. I'm not saying that men can't do that as well, but women, that is kind of an axiomatic priority for women, I suppose, in bringing forward new generations and to be protective of them. And I think the thing is that even though we may have far more women coming into our parliament, and in Australia we have, we congratulate ourselves that we've got almost a 50% representation of women in the federal parliament, it's still not the case that women really have access to what I call the policy agenda, because after, hundreds, thousands of years of patriarchal norms within that agenda. So our economic system, our legal system, our governance systems are all based on those norms. And women have only come in so gradually, and we might be there now, but it's been such a gradual process that we still don't really, we're playing within this old historically patriarchal playing field, if you like. And I don't really think we've got the opportunity to really bring a different agenda. And that's what the Women's Climate Congress has been working on. And through conversations with hundreds of women over the time since we formed in 2020, thousands of women actually, we have formed something called the Women's Climate Congress Charter for Change, which tries to put down a framework for the priorities that women who we've spoken to tell us are their priorities. And they are, well, in the short term, there's some practical solutions to securing the climate that we know we have to do in the very next few years. And then also looking longer term, how to create human and planetary long-being going into the longer term. And so our Charter for Change has got 11 themed actions. Three of them are about the things that we have to do right now to secure the climate, you know, which largely involve a lot more collaboration across parties and multi-stakeholder dialogue so that we can just deep listen to different perspectives, get agreement and get on with the job without it being oppositional politics all the time. Then there are 8 themed areas for human and planetary well-being, which are all of the things that the women we speak to bring to the table. And when we sit down, you can sit down with men and men bring these things to the table as well. And they're sort of intergenerational fairness, listening and incorporating First Nations knowledge, working on relationship building towards peace, creating a sustainable economy, which is based on care rather than just on, you know, business and profits. Well-being economy, I think, and a number of other issues in there that as a suite of things sort of create a picture of what we think, yeah, what women would like to bring to the table if they really had access to the policy agenda in a fully authentic way.
I remember back to those meetings in the Legislative Assembly in Canberra, Chatham House style meeting, and I was at a table with boffins on energy delivery from the Canberra government, and all sorts of people came together to have discussions on how to bring down the energy emissions in Canberra. And we succeeded. Yes. And you were part of that, weren't you?
Yes. I ran a series of conversations which were called Canberra Conversations over a number of years. Many of them were in collaboration with the ANU Climate Institute and the late Professor Will Steffen. And we sort of deliberately brought together people from business and academia and the government and activists from the community with an idea that with this multi-stakeholder to really showcase the type of conversations that you can have if you bring people together with an intention to listen deeply and work out a way forward together.
Janet, you use the word non-partisan debate.
Yeah.
What is that?
Well, trying to bring people together from across the different political parties and perspectives to listen together and work things out in a way. And we talk about having, you know, if necessary, for the very difficult decisions that we have to make in this next few years, you know, mediation, if necessary, to work things out. So rather than it just always being one side says one thing and the other side says the opposite, or to try really come together with mediation if necessary and work it out. So because we do not have time, we're in this kind of crisis where we have to work things out or we're going to be, you know, cooked basically.
Well, this has given me a great source of hope and why I'm coming to the conference, and I'm looking forward to meeting some people face to face. But give us a few more details. What's involved? Is food involved? What's provided?
Yes, so as I said, it's going to be held at the Castlemaine Town Hall, which is a wonderful venue, on the Friday the 28th of March. So it's the weekend of the 28th of March to the 30th of March. Friday, there isn't a formal programme as such, but because we know women are going to be travelling to Castlemaine, that we have got a bit of a programme of meet and greet on that day. There's a time when people can meet for lunch. There's a walk at one of the gardens in town that people can take part in. And in the evening, on the Friday, there's an informal get-together at one of the local pubs. And we actually have a wonderful speaker, Professor Kate Orty, who is living in Eurora. And she's going to tell us some of the work she's been doing in her Victorian community there in Eurora. Kate Orty actually is the former ACT Commissioner for Sustainability and Environment. She came from Country Victoria. And after she finished her position in the ACT, she's gone back into that community. So that's the Friday night. That's all informal. And the more sort of formal paid for part of the registration conference is on the Saturday and the Sunday at the town hall. That is catered. There'll be morning tea, lunch, all those sort of usual things that you have at a conference. We have some wonderful speakers, and we also are devoting quite a lot of time to participant workshops so that all the participants who come to the conference, and there are some amazing people coming, will be able to engage and workshop through ideas. And what we're hoping to come up with at the end, but to start with, we're very conscious of the fact there's going to be an election in process. So we want to have some sort of statement from the Women's Climate Congress and from this conference that we can feed into the election campaign as being the voice that we've found it and the what we want to happen, and also a sort of a more ongoing statement that will be for the new government of what our asks will be in relation to some really good, united and ambitious climate action planning going forward. We also have invited women who come who are artistic, because the WCC places a lot of emphasis on the arts as being a really important part of what we do, connecting people to their common humanity. Right from the beginning of the organisation, we've tried to integrate artistic expression into the work we do. And we've invited women who are artists to bring their artwork. So we're hoping to have an artwork display and also some music. And on the Saturday night, actually, there's a dinner in the town hall, and we're going to have some sort of singing and dancing after that dinner.
I'm glad you said that, because I am a great prescriber that if I can't dance, it's not my revolution.
Yeah. So we are excited that the Women's Environmental Leadership Australia, another organisation working very much in this same area of promoting women in leadership, and they run amazing training courses across the country for women in environmental leadership. A number of their team are coming to the Congress, including their CEO, Victoria Mackenzie McCarg, and they're bringing a wonderful 7.5-metre mural, which is a sort of historical look at the impact women have had in environmental work. Yeah, so it is going to be a very engaging and impactful 2 days, and we would love to see a lot of women coming there.
Well, having heard about it, I'm really looking forward to it. Ever since you started this, partly because I know you personally and I've sung with you in choirs, we're both mezzos, and so I've actually tuned into your voice and felt you in that way. And a lot of the other people who started out the Women's Climate Congress were part of the chorus of women in Canberra who were singing songs to try and shift people's consciousness. I feel very positive about your movement, and I'd just like to say carry on, but please let's all look after ourselves in this process. It's a lot of work for people, and we need to take care of ourselves as well. And so I'm just going to say goodbye now, because I've got some other things to do, and I know you do too. Have a great day, Janet.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. Have a great day.
Janet Salisbury, founder of the Women's Climate Congress. Earth Matters will be interviewing women at the Congress, so if you want your views to be recorded and maybe broadcast, be there and let us know.
You're listening to Earth Matters, broadcast nationally via the Community Radio Network.
Now for a burst of joyful anti-colonial noisemaking, a new release of do-it-yourself spirit and people of colour-led diversity.
From the Forest Party album, the song is Capitalism.
With Matsu and the Obscure Orchestra Collective.
Gotta get that paycheck to survive. Why? Gotta pay for things to stay alive. Why? Gotta get that paycheck to survive. Why? Gotta pay for things to stay alive.
Shortages, money come and money go. Kind of funny how it's like. Even the supermarket security. hard, shoplifting on the down low. The most basic means of subsistence have been privately enclosed and commodified. The mining company gets government approval to pull those entire forests and suck through the dry, but it's illegal for a homeless person to sleep in the bus station. The billionaires could get away with it. They charge us even for the air we breathe. So we find the shallowest cracks, dig our fingers in, break our nails, carve a deeper handhold so those that follow can climb a little higher and maybe tear this entire system to the ground. This machine is fueled by people thinking they've outsmarted it, when really they're still blinded, blindfolded at the heart of it. They got us fighting over crumbs, but I'm not coming just for the cake to see. No trickle-down fakery, we want the whole damn bakery.
Was Matsu and the Obscure Orchestra Collective with Forest Party.
The Arid Lands Environment Centre in Alice Springs punches above its weight. And maybe that's why the Country Liberal Party has defunded it, along with the Darwin Environment Centre, to the tune of $100,000 a year. This is the money that is meant to assist the Environment Centre engage the community in learning about and commenting on what the government is doing with our environment. Well, we're about to hear Alex Vaughan presenting their campaigns that expose the massive extractivism. Seems to want to turn this beautiful, wild Northern Territory into a radioactive waste dump. It's like a fracking sacrifice zone. And he's going to explain how you can help the distant arid lands from your own home.
I'm talking to Alex Vaughan, the policy officer with the Arid Lands Environment Centre. Where are you, Alex?
Here in Mbantua, Alice Springs, on Aranda Country. We know that the Northern Territory already has some of the worst protections around water in the country. We don't have any native vegetation legislation. We have no biodiversity strategy. We have unfit for purpose climate legislation. The safeguards don't exist, yet the attacks still come. So it's been a really big last week since this cut has happened, but this will not stop our advocacy. We're a community organisation that's been in the Central Desert since 1980 for 45 years, and we're really proud of our history, and we're proud to provide capacity for communities that are resisting unjust development to continue to resist, to continue to learn more about what these developments are and why they're here. And we listen to, support and learn from these communities.
Sure, it's a bit of a blow to be off the gravy train of government. What can the hoi polloi do to help the Arid Lands Environment Centre right now?
I think it's really important for community members across the country just to, where possible, you know, there's a lot of really extreme things happening all around the world, but sure, where possible, keep an eye on the Northern Territory. There's a vanguard of development that is emerging across Northern Australia that's really trying to limit public scrutiny of fossil fuel developments and big extractive industry projects. And this wave and this model is really pushing the boundaries of what Australia is used to, and it risks becoming normal and sweep across the entire continent. We're small community organisations. The population of the Northern Territory is 250,000 people, but we represent nearly 20% of the continent's land mass. So the size of a local government area in terms of population, but a huge proportion of land, and obviously a significant proportion of Aboriginal land rights land, native title, as well as crown land, pastoral estate, national parks. People just to stay engaged, be aware. We've got some really authoritarian legislation coming through for the Territory Coordinator, which is fundamentally changing the structure of government and giving an unelected bureaucrat far-reaching extreme powers to make decisions instead of the proper decision maker, or to sidestep particular laws in totality, basically to turbocharge development. So stay aware of the types of development that's happening here, whether it's gas expansion in the Beetaloo Basin, or offshore at the Barossa gas fields, or the Middle Arm petrochemical hub and gas processing facility near Darwin and Palmerston, to Australia's largest groundwater freshwater license at Singleton Station, near Alikurung on Kadish country, about 3 hours north of Mbantu Alice Springs. We're having big fires consistently across the Northern Territory, and these are a result of invasive fire-promoting weeds such as bufflegrass, to, you know, proposals around nuclear waste and extractivism more broadly. There's some really big threats. And add in, you know, the biodiversity and climate crisis. There's lots we can learn from what not to do here in the Northern Territory, but also it's really important that these regional, remote and very remote areas receive solidarity, you know, when they're taking on really big corporations and really ghastly projects. So stay connected, keep talking, and yeah, if you have ways in which we can grow our movement, yeah, we're keen to hear it.
Well, I'd be interested to know what really feels like solidarity to you. You're a week's drive away from where I am and about, I don't know, a few hundred dollars airfares and a bit of guilt to get and see you. How do you actually experience support from the other place in this country?
I think for us, you know, we're a community environment centre. We're in the arid lands, desert country often, but also, you know, amazing mulga woodlands, river red gums across these vast landscapes. Groundwater is integral to the way of life and sustenance of these ecological and cultural landscapes here. I think a basic form of solidarity is awareness raising. When people talk about big environmental projects and issues, some of the projects in the Northern Territory aren't very known compared to the big fights that could be happening in WA or gas development to Santos in Narrabri, or, you know, in the past, the Adani coal mine, one of Australia's largest agricultural developments and groundwater license at Singleton Station. This has been a four-year fight, but we're still, I guess, fighting for recognition and awareness from communities outside of the central deserts around these struggles. Some of this is slowly. That project featured recently towards the end of last year in a Four Corners episode still helps in raising the profile. But I think solidarity includes, you know, just that simple community watchdog, sharing support, sharing skills and capacity. And some of that can be done remotely. We're small community organizations and we have connections, small connections all around the country. But when people are talking about big environmental crises, that issues in the Northern Territory are included. You know, these are nationally important fights in terms of the scale and the way that resistance is occurring, but they're not necessarily as widely known. And there's reasons for that. We are a long way away. And as well, you know, desert country, the arid lands are a more prejudiced landscape. You know, we are viewed as the outback. The Wastelands Act was the first act that existed for the arid lands in the 19th century. You know, it's unproductive, it's deserted, there's nothing here. So we have big challenges, both in particular projects, but also mindset around the abundance, diversity, and importance of these areas. Australia's 10 deserts, from the Simpson Desert to the Great Victoria Desert to the Tanami Desert, are phenomenal and very varied in the types of deserts they are. And we're also a unique place in terms of we're almost completely dependent on groundwater below the surface, in terms of for drinking water, but also in terms of maintaining ecological resistance. What does climate change look like in an arid area compared to coastal communities? There's lots of learnings here. There's lots of research that can be done. And yeah, the arid lands are amazing and we're very lucky to be able to live here and learn and be based in Barnto Alice Springs, a site of cultural richness and diversity, and in which the Environment Centre can really continue to learn more and also participate in solidarity on the country that we are based on and also the communities and countries that we work with across the arid land.
I once went to the Arid Lands Environment Centre on a Saturday morning for the produce stall, which was a really small affair, and there was only one person there. It was Costa. So I took a photo with Costa and went home with some things off the stall. What is the history of the Arid Lands Environment Centre?
So ALEC, or the Arid Lands Environment Centre, started in 1980. So we've been going for 45 years. And it was researchers and environmentalists and activists that were really engaged and concerned with the anti-nuclear waste movement, as well as other issues that became very pertinent in the 80s and 90s and has continued to be for the last 45 years. Nuclear waste is a big issue, but as well, gas in the Beetaloo Basin has been a campaign in ALEC for over a decade. Water issues, renewable energy, been different phases of ALEC in the past. There's been much bigger focus on local sustainability. We used to run the tip shop a very long time ago. ALEC still has two community gardens, which still exists and still important parts of our community. But also, yeah, engaging in the big threats: climate, water, biodiversity crisis, gas expansion, big agribusiness, nuclear waste, our core business for ALEC. And we're really proud of the diverse history that's here. But also we're a scrappy grassroots organisation and we're still true to those values as well.
Alex Spawn, you're the policy officer of the Arid Lands Environment Centre. Thanks very much for talking to Earth Matters, and we really hope to learn more in the future about your campaigns, especially the bufflegrass, because we want to talk about that. That's something that's right around the top end there, isn't it? And it's spreading. And maybe Earth Matters can help get the word out that you can get rid of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the opportunity. And we always love to talk about bufflegrass, the greatest fire-promoting weed to arid lands. So thank you for the opportunity and look forward to talking more soon.
Alex Vaughan from the Arid Lands Environment Centre. If you go to the Earth Matters homepage, you'll be able to see a link to their website and ways to help them with this mammoth David against Goliath battle.
You've been listening to Earth Matters, Community Radio's National Environment Justice Program. I'm Beck Horridge. If you've missed any of today's show, you can find our podcasts at 3cr.org.au/Earth Matters. Or if you're listening via iTunes or any other podcasting service, why not rate us and leave us a review and help spread the word? Earth Matters would like to thank the Community Broadcasting Foundation for their financial support and the Community Radio Network for getting the program out to you. Earth Matters is produced in the studios of 3CR. On Wurundjeri country. If you'd like to get in contact, you can send us an email at earthmatters3cr@gmail.com or go to our Facebook page. I hope you can tune in next time for one more Earth Matters.
Hi, this is Richard Blue from Gaslight Puppet Show. This song's called Harmonic Convergence. Yeah, this song is about the daily grind and the grim reality of trying to find a way out. Thank you.